Well, hello again, everybody out there in Turdville. It is Thursday, the 8th of October, a little bit after 10 o'clock Eastern, and there's a lot going on bubbling behind the scenes under the surface this morning. Big news late yesterday was the massive write-down out of Deutsche Bank, out of Germany, some other distress coming this morning out of Credit Suisse, and I thought I would take this opportunity to see if I could visit with our friend Denver Dave Kranzler. Dave, if most of you know who Dave is, he's a good friend of Turdville. He is a longtime Wall Street trader, also a money manager, and now analyst, pundit, writes great stuff at Investment Research Dynamics, and knows a lot about derivatives and what might be going on behind the scenes. And so anyway, Dave, thank you for spending some time with us. I'm looking forward to picking your brain a little bit.
Hey, not a problem. I mean, you characterize me as saying I know a lot about derivatives. I probably know just enough to make myself sound intelligent, but I really don't know that much. None of us knows very much about these derivatives. In fact, the people who structure them and sell them into the marketplace don't know much about them.
Well, that's a good point. Let's put it this way. You're more familiar with it all than probably 99.99% of the population at this point. So
it just says I don't have a lot of fun in my life if I spend time studying the derivatives market.
All right. So anyway, for everybody listening, I'm privileged to count Dave as a friend. And so we email each other back and forth every once in a while during the week. And we're a part of some other email groups on the internet, and where people kind of share information that they're hearing. And one of those groups have been discussing Deutsche Bank now for quite some time. And there was some discussion that October 7th was going to be a significant date. And it did turn out to be a significant date. October 7th was yesterday. That was the date of this pre-announcement of the massive write-down. And Dave, you've mentioned a couple things about your experience was with Bankers Trust, right? And that was bought out by Deutsche Bank. Yeah,
yep.
So you kind of still know. I mean, do you still know some folks there? I
don't, but a very good friend of mine in New York City who stayed on with Deutsche Bank after I split, he's still got contacts there.
Let me just turn the floor over to you. What do you think is going on? How big? I mean, is this? Are we sitting here in let's call it July of 2008 and seeing what's happening to Lehman? That's going to be coming over the horizon by September, you know, if you get my drift. What's your gut tell you? What's your experience tell you? What are the dominoes that are falling into each other at this point?
No, this isn't Lehman. This is Lehman times 10.
Oh boy.
I mean, you know, here's the thing. I mean, the Deutsche Bank news was kind of received with a little bit of shock and awe. I mean, oh my God, a $7 billion write down. But if you look at what the write-downs were, it was essentially impairment of goodwill and certain intangibles, plus a smidgen of it was writing down the carrying value of their 20% stake in a Chinese bank or a Chinese whatever it is.
Just throw that in there.
And then you know, another $1.2 billion for litigation. Well, you know, they probably need, you know, $1.2 billion times 10 for the litigation that they should be facing. So, but here's the thing. I mean, I looked at their latest balance sheet, which is as of the end of June, converted it into dollars, and they've got $1.5 trillion in assets against $67 billion in book value. Okay, so it's basically a leverage ratio of 22 to 1. And in my blog post where I write about this that I wrote up last night, I mean, essentially their balance sheet itself is an OTC derivative with that kind of leverage in it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for them to take, you know, a $7 billion write down for the impairment of goodwill and certain intangibles. I mean, let's look at what's blown up in the last few months. You've had high yield cratered, industrial commodities cratered, the oil markets cratered over the last year, emerging market currencies, Volkswagen, Glencore, you know, and biotech's also cratered, but we'll throw that out. Of those other things, Deutsche Bank has huge exposure to all of them. All right?
Right.
They've got huge exposure to the high-yield market, high-yield derivatives. I know that because that the reason why they bought Bankers Trust was for the derivatives business, and we had a fairly robust high-yield credit derivatives business at the time. Okay, industrial commodities. I mean, they're not lending just to Glencore, but there's your exposure to industrial commodities. Emerging market currencies, the same thing. I mean, that's part of the reason why all these banks are trying to manipulate this stuff. How about Volkswagen? I mean, they're the largest lender to Volkswagen. But not only that, I found out last night, Deutsche Bank has a program of middle market lending to private businesses over in Germany. And a lot of those businesses happen to be suppliers to Volkswagen. And this crisis is spreading to all the other German automotive manufacturers. So Deutsche Bank has huge exposure to all of that. And then obviously Glencore. So you're telling me that, $1.5 trillion of assets, of which a substantial portion is exposed to all these sectors that have blown up, and their write down was $7 billion on top of $1.5 trillion of assets. That's just silly.
Well, and the OCC report came out last week that showed all of the major five U.S. banks all having, you know, these huge levels of derivative exposures. Well, J.P. Morgan had $1.9 trillion in assets and something like $52 trillion of derivatives. And it was on down the line to Citigroup and Bank of America and Morgan Stanley and all the rest. And all of these banks are hooked together, right? I mean, they're in one somebody's party to somebody else's counterparty and that type of thing. Isn't that kind of this whole derivative daisy chain?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like Ebola. Once you touch someone with it, it spreads to 10 different people.
So what do you think is the risk, Dave? I mean, we're just speculating, but I mean, clearly the news is bad that hit yesterday and perhaps indicative of some future, some real trouble for them coming, for everybody coming over the horizon. Is it that the Bundesbank and the ECB can somehow keep a zombie like Deutsche Bank alive? You'd mentioned this morning that the U.S. banks, everybody knows they're sitting on about $2.5 trillion in just simple cash that the Fed has given them over the last 6 years. Is that what's keeping the U.S. banks from having to recognize all these derivative losses that they have? I mean, is it possible to keep the chain all linked together, or is something like Deutsche Bank going to pull the whole thing apart, do you think, in the coming months?
Well, it wasn't possible in 2008 to keep it together, and it's way worse now than it was then. Let's just put the derivatives, just Deutsche Bank's derivatives, in perspective here. Okay, so they say they've got $75 trillion in derivatives, right? I think that's what basically the latest OCC. And the real number is a lot bigger than $75 trillion. The $75 trillion is calculated based on their quote-unquote netting. So that's assuming zero counterparty risk. Or they may have some factor in there for counterparty risk. But as we found out in 2008, as we found out with long-term capital, I mean, these guys all vastly underestimate their counterparty risk. If they factored in what the realistic volatility and risk factors are for these derivatives, no one would ever buy them because they'd be too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically insurance policies, and essentially with these derivatives, in a way, they're giving away the insurance policy almost for free in relationship to the size of the potential liability. So Deutsche Bank has $75 trillion in net derivatives exposure, right? Well, let's look at that in relationship to the $7 billion write-down. With all this stuff that's blown up that Deutsche Bank has a ton of exposure to, the write-down amounts to 0.006% of their derivatives. So essentially what they're saying is that they've got a perfect hedge. Now, what are the odds of that their derivatives book is perfectly hedged?
Right.
And their book capital is so thin, it doesn't take much. You don't have to move the needle not much on the value of their derivatives in order to completely wipe out their book net worth, which means, essentially they're technically insolvent. And I made this argument, it was before I had a blog, and I did some analysis on Lehman, Wash Mutual, Wachovia, and J.P. Morgan. And this was in late 2007, early 2008. And I looked at their balance sheet, and all of these, and I was in Wells Fargo also, and all I was looking at was their exposure to home equity paper, which they all had, you know, way overmarked. And I said, okay, well, look, the housing market's crashing. Okay, this home equity paper essentially is going to be worth zero, which it was, and that's a big part of what the Fed bailed out. But this home equity paper is going to be worth essentially zero. But let's say it's worth 50 cents on the dollar, and then run through the analysis of what these bank balance sheets look like. Well, all of them had, you know, a couple hundred billion dollars in net worth after you did a true mark to market, and that didn't include their derivatives. Now, that was back then. Now the situation with Deutsche Bank's even worse, and their assets are even more toxic. I mean, high yield, industrial commodities, oil, EM currencies, Volkswagen exposure, and Glencore, that's all toxic.
Yeah.
So essentially, I mean, if you ask me, I think realistically Deutsche Bank's insolvent. And I think that announcement they made yesterday was sort of all the analysts, ooh, that's bigger than we thought it would be. I think they made that, it was sort of for shock and awe to satisfy the analysts. But that was just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
So
right.
I think there's, and then this morning it comes out that Credit Suisse is now looking for capital. There's a serious liquidity problem in the global banking system, and especially over in Europe. And I think they don't have the excess reserves built up that the Fed has built up in the U.S. banks. And if, you know, people don't really remember this, but everyone looks at Lehman as being the trigger point in what happened in 2008. But Europe started collapsing first. And that may be what we're seeing this time. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that definitely kind of puts it all in perspective. I mean, what would you be looking for next, do you think, Dave? I mean, if this is all beginning to, I don't know if you can hear the lawnmowers going by outside my office window. Nothing like a professional production on this end. Given your experience and what happened in 2008, and obviously recognizing this could all be different, but what would you be looking for next? Just more announcements of write-downs from other banks? What would be some further warning bells, do you think?
I don't know, Craig. I mean, right now, the only thing that they're letting out in the media and reporting is the stuff that's really obvious. I mean, Deutsche Bank had to come out with some kind of write-down this quarter. They had to, or no one would have believed it.
Yeah.
And look at the Glencore situation. Originally, we were told it was $30 billion in debt that they had. Well, as it turns out, they may have as much as $100 billion in debt, including their bank credit lines, which they can continue drawing down until they violate covenants in those credit lines. And then they've got, trade finance receivables out there. It sounds like those are about another $5 to $10 billion potentially. And so, I mean, the Glencore situation is way worse than it's being reported in the media. And we don't know what it's about because we can't see behind the veil that they've put up to prevent us from seeing what it's all about.
Right.
I mean, just the derivatives alone, if you go through these bank balance sheets and look at the footnotes, you can't tell anything about what they've really got with their derivatives from looking at the footnotes. And most of these banks don't even know what they've got because the people in the trenches who write up the contracts and sell them for a fat profit margin, they lie to upper management. Yeah. I know that because I saw it firsthand at Deutsche Bank.
That's true. It happens all the time. It happens everywhere.
Right. Then upper management lies to the Fed.
Dave, let me ask you one last question. You know, you wrote a great report that I posted here with one of my podcasts earlier this week about the surge in reverse repos. When I saw that too, I thought, you know, some of that coincides with the end of the quarter, and we've seen that in the last couple of quarters where all of a sudden these banks swap out their cash for a couple of days just to fancy up their annual or their quarterly reports to make it look like they're sitting on actual assets and not cash. You saw that though and made a great note about how much more significant of a number that is than it's ever been in the past.
It gets bigger. It's been getting bigger. It's been growing over the course of the last year. And what I unintentionally left this out is that a third of the reverse repos were done with foreign institutions. So it's not quarter end window dressing for the banks.
Got it.
There's a collateral shortage out there, and banks use treasuries and mortgage securities to post as collateral against derivatives. You know, treasuries are preferred because it's the lowest haircut.
Right.
You post it as collateral. And And so what it tells me is that there's a big shortage of collateral out there. And I wrote an article when the Fed was first testing its tri-party reverse repo system, when they announced it. I don't know, it was a couple years ago. Right. They were developing it. Uh-huh. And I said, this is a way to get collateral out of parties like money market funds who hold collateral but can't do repos directly with the Fed. So they set up the tri-party repo system in order to make available the collateral that's held by, hedge funds and money market funds so that it can be used in the marketplace, because they knew that they were going to need a lot of this collateral to be posted as derivatives because they knew it was going to melt down.
So the Fed has soaked up, and all the central banks have soaked up so much collateral too. And what you're saying is there's a collateral shortage, but it's exasperated by this sudden need for additional collateral.
And it's not just the banks that need the collateral. There's other entities out there that need the collateral, counterparty hedge funds. How about mutual funds? I mean, BlackRock comes out yesterday and says, oh, well, we need to have a mechanism that allows us to unplug the New York Stock Exchange in times of high volatility. Well, they weren't making that proposal when the stock market was going up,
right?
And the bond market was going up, interest rates were falling. But now all of a sudden that there's a high degree of downside volatility, all of a sudden now they're worried about the downside risk.
Yeah.
And BlackRock, probably of all the mutual funds, probably has by far the biggest exposure to derivatives, and they're probably starved for collateral to post it, for margin calls against their derivatives.
They've got a pretty big exposure to high yield too, don't they?
High yield and emerging market.
Yeah. Again, there's another dot you can connect. And I'm sure a lot of folks, when you were talking about putting something in place in advance, the first thing that comes to my mind too was that sudden imposition, if you will, of the position, or not position limits, of the trading limits in gold. Remember all of a sudden, whatever that was, 6-8 months ago, and all of a sudden there's a $5 daily limit in silver, and we're all sitting back scratching our heads going, huh.
That's a good example of something that's put in place, that they put in place that they know they're going to need down the road, that it's happened so long ago that people forget about it. I forgot mm-hmm. about that, but you're right. No one talks about it, but it's there.
And at the time, silver's at $16, $17, and you're like, huh, that seems like that's a really wide band. I wonder...
Well, there's a reason why they put that in there, and these guys know, maybe not the guys sitting around the table at the FOMC. My buddy John Titus has studied it intently, and he thinks that most of the people sitting around the table at the FOMC are there just sort of for cosmetic purposes. They're all these, quote unquote academics and regional Fed bank presidents. But he said they're basically academic geeks who don't understand the real system. And he said there's a chance that, the people who are put in charge of the Fed, Bernanke and now Yellen and Stanley Fisher, they're in on the rig. They know what's going on.
They have to.
He found a statement in one of the FOMC transcripts from 2009 where Yellen basically said, we know the jobs number is BS.
Well, was that, and by the way, thank John, that last thing that he did a couple of weeks ago, right before, I think it came out the day of that last Fed meeting back in September, where he showed, he broke down the minutes from 2009 or 10.
2009, yeah.
He just laid it out. Now, there's no exit strategy. There never any plan to have an exit strategy. They know what they bought. They bought all this garbage. They sometimes even paid a premium for the garbage. It was remarkable. He did a great job.
They knew that they had to figure out a way to monetize the banks and get the asset, the toxic assets off their balance sheet. So it's basically, fire ready aim. Let's do what we need to do, and then we'll figure out how to deal with it, down the road. And this is why they're not going to be able to manipulate the market forever, because the problem's going to be too big. And I think that's what we're starting to see right now. I think the problem's becoming too big.
Right.
I mean, you got Glencore, Deutsche Bank, now Credit Suisse. Who knows what's lurking in some of the banking systems of some of those Club Med countries. Germany, though, is the biggest problem. I mean, Deutsche Bank itself is sovereign risk for Germany. And I don't think that situation is going to be able to be – I don't think it'll be fixed. I don't think they can – I don't think the German government can address it without going into Weimar-style printing. I mean, their exposure is just too big.
Well, and that certainly seems to be at least one of the directions this is headed. And as you mentioned, the extent to which these banks are interlinked, that's why they're too big to fail. That's where that term came from, because if one goes down, it takes all of them with them.
Exactly.
And boy, I tell you, this news yesterday on Deutsche Bank should definitely put everybody's antenna up and make you aware of, things are not as well as, and they're not as rosy as you're being led to believe, and the warning signs are there. So, Dave, I want to thank you for taking some time this morning and giving us your opinion on all this stuff, because, gosh, it is definitely a time for people to be paying attention and wary and cautious, especially if you're an equity investor or if you're sitting in high yield funds or just have investments anywhere within the system. Now's the time to be extra cautious, it would seem.
Oh, anyone who's still in the stock market or the bond market has a death wish for their net worth.
They're asking for
trouble. I'm serious.
Yeah. No, you're right. Dave, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and we'll certainly be in touch. And I want to encourage everybody, if you're not visiting Investment Research Dynamics on a daily basis, if you're not following Dave on Twitter, for crying out loud, it's one of the best Twitter follows you can have. Please do so. His Twitter handle's on this page. The directions to his site is on this page, and I encourage you to go there a couple times a day. Thank you, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon, my friend.
Anytime, Craig. I always love chatting with you.
Have a great day.
You too.